Today is January the 22nd, 2014, and I'm here to interview Dorothea Brander. Dorothea, can I begin by asking you where you were born and what was your name at birth?
I was born in Berlin, on the Kurfürstendamm corner of Joachim Friedrich Straße, and the house was bombed. It exists no longer. That was in 1924, and my parents were staying with my aunt and uncle, who were called Feistmann, and the doctor who delivered me was called Michaelis.
And what was your name at birth?
Dorothea Charlotte.
That's her name?
Merzbacher.
Right. And were they an Orthodox Jewish family?
No. My family was never Orthodox. They were certainly Jewish, but not Orthodox.
Right. And you were old enough in 1933, I suppose, to remember the coming of the Nazis. What do you remember from that time?
Yes, I do remember it very well, because my father worked for the Auergesellschaft, which is a factory which was producing all sorts of things. They started with light bulbs and then went on to chemicals. And my father was involved in poison gas.
So he was
he was a chemist, but they made toothpaste called Doramat.
So it was very wide-ranging what they produced.
That's right.
And your father, did he concentrate on poison gas? Was that
well, him? That was the thing he was mainly involved in. I think at the time it was thought that that would be for coal mines.
To identify the gas, you mean?
I'm not sure. Right. No.
And your family, was it just you and your parents?
And my brother, 3 years older than me. And we went to what was called the Realgymnasium eventually. First to the Volksschule, the Volksschule in Germany, and then to the Realgymnasium, which was very near our house.
And when Hitler came to power, did your father have problems with his job, or did he keep his job at first?
No, he didn't have any problems. I think they knew very well that the poison gas he was involved in would be helpful to Hitler's cause. We didn't have any problems, although we lived right across from the factory in a house which belonged to the factory. And my father had very good colleagues, one Austrian colleague, Dr. Hernes, and his family, who also lived in the same house, and she was Jewish. The other people in the house were not Jewish.
So you would have had just a flat in this house?
We had a flat, yes.
To the company?
We had a company flat, that's right. And the strange thing was, we had the first anti-air raid shelter in the whole of Germany. So there is a picture of me sitting as a child in the anti-air raid shelter.
How early was that?
I must have been about 5 or 6 at the time.
And is that because the company was concerned for its employees?
No, that was because of what they were manufacturing, I think.
I see.
In retrospect, that's what I think.
And then what happened? Your father was able to keep his job.
He was in his job, and then eventually they asked him if he would like to start factory in Turkey making gas masks. So he went to Istanbul to have a look to see what was going to be involved. And when he came back, he said, it looks like a good idea to emigrate to Turkey. We could have gone to Paris, but he rejected that, which in retrospect seems fortunate.
Very much so. And do you think he was looking for somewhere else to go because he recognised dangers that were there?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course.
So it wasn't anything to do with the factory that was sending him. He was recognising what was happening.
The man who was a president of the factory was a very benevolent man and a very good person, as it turned out, who looked after my father always.
It's his idea that your father looked for somewhere in Turkey.
Yes.
That's interesting. So you went to Turkey when you were...
I was 11.
11. Mm-hmm. And what happened then? Were you aware of what was happening in Germany while you were...
Oh, yes, very much so. We did know.
Had you left family behind in Germany?
Yes, we had left some family behind, right. And we were always in touch with Germany, with our family. And in fact, after the first year in Turkey, we were able to go back to Germany to see my grandfather, who was still alive, in Munich. And because it was the Olympics that year, we were allowed to bring out some money from Germany. And my father bought a very expensive camera, a Leica. And what else?
And did he do that to spend money and be able to take
help
with
him? That's right.
Had he not been able to take his money out prior to
that? Well, he didn't have to because he was employed by the German factory. He was getting his pay from them first. Right. And then the Turks took it over and paid him.
Right.
So we didn't have to take any money out from Germany, really.
And you... When you went back, did you notice a difference? Do you remember
noticing? Oh, yes, of course.
In what respect?
Well, we knew that the Jews had to leave Germany and, you know, that they were being persecuted and that we were very fortunate to have the choice to go to a country like Turkey, who were fairly benevolent to us, and that other people had a much worse time emigrating to various countries, including America or Switzerland or even Austria in those days still.
And did you go to school in Turkey?
Yes. Well, I was taught privately. My parents thought I was too delicate to send straight to a Turkish school, which would have been quite difficult because I would have had to learn Turkish right away. So there was a lady called Kudrette, Mrs. Doris Kudrette, and she was German originally, but married to a Turkish engineer. And she ran a private little, well, it wasn't a school, it was private lessons, really, for immigrant children, of which, of course, I was one. But there were also Swiss children, French children, all kinds of other children in the classes. And that's where I was taught until I was, I think, maybe nearly 16.
And at that time, had you learnt any Turkish?
Yes. You couldn't help really learning Turkish because I would play with Turkish children in the street and neighbors, and she taught us Turkish. We had Turkish lessons, oh yes.
And was your brother also taught?
No, my brother, they felt he was older because he was 3 years older. They said he's old enough, he can go straight into a Turkish school. So he went into a Turkish, what they called a gymnasium, a secondary school, and he had a uniform, and he went on his bike to the school, which was outside Ankara, and graduated from there.
And once the war began, did you remain in Turkey?
Yes. Of course. There wasn't anything else to do for us. I mean, we didn't have German nationality as such anymore, really. You know, our passports were taken away. And we were stateless, really. So we had no option but to stay in Turkey.
And yet you're here in Scotland. So what happened that allowed you out of Turkey? Were you all able to leave? Did you meet somebody, or what happened? How is it that Turkish time ended?
Well, it went on for a long time. We were there for many years, and at one point everybody had to have a G in their German passport. So my father said to my brother, "You go to the German embassy and ask them to put the G in our passports." And so my brother wouldn't think anything about it. He just went up to the German embassy and he said, "Please, will you put the G in our passports, you know, because we are Jewish." Mm-hmm. And in those days, the German embassy was pretty mixed. I mean, they weren't completely on Hitler's side, although mostly, really. And the man did. He just put the J in the passports, and he wrote a letter to say that we were no longer Germans. Yeah. That, you know, he probably shouldn't have done that, but he did.
And that made you stateless at that point, is that?
Yes, that made us stateless, which is what was right for us to be, I mean, according to the law in Germany. And my brother then went to Istanbul to the university to study physics, and most of his teachers were German or Jewish professors who had emigrated to Istanbul. And he graduated from Istanbul as a physicist. I stayed in Ankara, and there was not much I could do because according to Turkish law, I was only allowed to be a milliner, you know, hat maker.
Yes, why was your brother able to go to university and you were limited? Do you know?
Well, because he had the proper Turkish education.
Oh, I see.
You know, he had been in a Turkish school.
Right.
So he was allowed to attend the university in Istanbul and graduate there.
And it was because you didn't have the correct qualifications that you
probably
had these,
yes,
limitations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And why were you only allowed to be a milliner? Is that because you that were Jewish, think?
No, that was a limitation for people who didn't have nationality. I was stateless, really, you know. I didn't have any nationality.
So did you become a milliner?
Well, I had to go to the only possible school for me, which was, I'm leaving out a few things because it goes on longer than that. It was called the school to learn trades, the trade school for girls, only girls. And it was really mostly, the students lived there, but I didn't. I was able to live at home and go to school every day, and I trained to be a milliner, yes, for 2 years. We had very good teachers in that school. They were all trained in France or Belgium, and the director was a French lady, and so it was a very good training. And the other girls liked me because I was outside. I didn't have to stay in. So, you know, if they had any little messages or anything, I could always act for them. But anyway, I was in that school and I qualified as a milliner, yes. And there were many other lessons, and I quarreled with a cookery teacher because I thought she was teaching us rubbish.
And
I was never beyond saying what I thought, which wasn't always very good. But
and all during this time, did your family maintain its Jewish habits or culture?
They didn't have any particular Jewish culture. Mm. I mean, we, you know, yes, but we were part of a very large immigrant community, and a lot of these people were Jewish. Yeah. And in fact, that community was very active. For instance, they ran seminars about every month. There was somebody gave a lecture, and there were very many highly qualified people. So we might have a lecture about the Hittites or a lecture about some medical subject, or, and there was always, you know, somebody gave a lecture, and then afterwards there was a get together and drinks and food, and so it was a very close-knit community. And of course, that they were called Colony A and Colony B, and Colony A was the Nazi, the German embassy people, and B was us, the refugees.
I see. And did you mix at all with local Turkish people, or was this mostly...
Well, yes, if they wanted to, sure, yes. My father had some very good colleagues, Turkish colleagues. Some of them were trained in Germany, and then he also had quite close connections with some of the army people who were in charge of various things in the factory, because what they were making, gas masks.
And is that what he was doing in Turkey, making gas masks?
Well, he was a director for the factory that were making the gas masks, yes.
That's very interesting. And then what happened?
Well, after a while, he had his Turkish colleagues took over the factory because, you know, they were perfectly able to do it. And he was really, he wasn't ever quite unemployed, because a bank took over looking after him and giving him a job, Simmer Bank it was called, and they paid him a salary, but it wasn't as good, and I often had to go and interpret, you know, with the Turkish offices about things for my father.
Because your Turkish was better than
yeah,
his?
My Turkish was perfect.
Right.
And, gosh, what else?
And did you remain there and your mother for the rest of their lives?
No.
Or did they leave?
No.
What happened?
First of all, my brother, after he finished, he got a job at a school in Ankara, which was partly paid for by the Americans, I think, a sort of college, but school, you know, for children. And he was teaching physics there. And then he applied for a grant to go to America through the, what was it called? A Jewish organization in Boston. Oh God, I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, it's all in a big book. And they gave him a grant to come to America. So he went to America to this Jewish organization in Boston, and he lived with a rabbi and his family, and his job was to keep an eye on the rabbi's boys. I think he had two boys, and Eugen was supposed to look after them, as well as, of course, going to university and starting to study for his PhD, which he did at Harvard.
What year would this have been?
That was after the war, yes. Just after the war, right. I think. Uh-huh. And
the rest of you were still in Ankara?
We were in Ankara, and there's a lot in between, I'll have to be telling you. Yeah. But in the meantime, well, I met Donald, and he was with the British Council. And
he was from Scotland originally?
Yes, he came from Glasgow. But there's a big story in between. During the war, the Turks interned the Nazis in Turkey, but not only, the Nazis mostly went back to Germany anyway, but anybody who was not Jewish was interned in concentration camps, and the concentration camps weren't like other places. The people were just sent to Turkish villages, and it was two different villages. They were sent to the ones who were questionably Nazis were sent to one place, and the ones who were not Nazis were sent to another village. And my brother at that time was very much the go-between, because the Turks interned them in this village, but they didn't give them any money or anything. They just say, you just live in that village and that's it. So of course they didn't have any money to live. And the bee colony, the mostly Jewish people, gathered money to keep them. So my brother was the one who had to go every month with the money to this village so that, you know, they could subsist.
And was that, did the Jewish community look after the Nazi village as well, or just
No, they didn't, just except maybe by default,
by
yes.
Right, so
and
it was
that did happen.
The non-political Germans.
That's right, that's right. Oh, no, some of them very political, because they were Germans who were looking to going back to Germany after the war, if Germany was defeated.
Yes, so non-fascist Germans.
Exactly.
And why was your brother involved in that?
Well, because he didn't have that much to do, just except being a bit of a teacher in the school sometimes, you know. And also, he had a very good friend there, or several good friends, and so had my mother. So my mother, she used to be the one who gathered the money together. And then my brother went, sometimes she had to sew the money into his coat seam or something, you know, because the Turks were completely ignorant of what to do, really. So anyway, he took the money. And then one time, by this time, I knew Donald. And Donald said, oh, I'll come with you to this village, you know, and see what's going on there. So he came with me, and we went to see our friends. And we got engaged there in this village.
And that was after the war? Or
well, just the about end the war? End of the war, I suppose, yes. Yes. When did the war end?
1945.
Well, it must have been after the war. No, because, I mean, we went out and it all happened very close together.
Right. Just before the end of the war.
Anyway, we got engaged there. There's some photographs. And then I had to get ready, really, to go with him back to Britain.
You must have had English as well then, did you learn
yes,
to speak
yes,
English?
Yes, oh yes, I spoke very good English. I learned English all from this very good teacher. And also I had another pretty clueless boyfriend there that I learned some English from, but I didn't like him much. And yes, I learned from this lady taught us English and French, and she was amazing. I mean, she could teach you anything you wanted. If you said you want to learn Spanish tomorrow, she would try to teach you that. But English, certainly, I spoke perfectly by this time.
And so when you left Turkey with Donald, did your parents come with you?
No. My parents couldn't come with me. They stayed there another year, I think, after that. And then a former colleague of my father's from Germany, but a Jewish guy who was worked in the same factory as him, he had emigrated to America, and he helped my father to emigrate to the States. You know, you had to get a permit or something. And at that point, Kissinger's family were involved as well. They all knew each other. And my father got a wee job in Newark, New Jersey, for him it was a pretty miserable kind of job, making paints, but still, it was work. And And so they went to live in New Jersey in a tiny little flat. And I later, a year or so later, I went to visit them. By this time, I had two kids, and I went back to visit them. But that's all, you know, a bit later.
Right. So tell me about you and Donald. Did you come straight to
Scotland?
Well,
we went. No, no. We went on honeymoon. We're supposed. But we got married on VE Day, which is a bit funny. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't anybody around to sign the register on that day. Of course, they were all busy getting the champagne ready and blah, blah. So, in actual fact, our wedding certificate was signed in the British Embassy on the stair, I remember. And one of the consuls was a very good old friend of ours. He signed our marriage certificate on the stair to the party. So then, of course, we took part in the victory party, and a friend lent me a ball gown, and we went to the stew after having had a party in my family's house, smaller party. And I remember my brother, he was still there then, he made a drink, but we didn't have any receptacle big enough. He said, okay, I'll scrub out the baths, and I'll just make it in the bath. And he did. It was fine. There were about, I think, 80 people in our flat, which wasn't very big, really, but all the neighbors and friends came, you know.
And how old were you and Donald?
Well, Donald was much older than me. I was just 18, I suppose. 18, I must have been. Yeah, and Donald was 40, maybe 41 or something. He was born in 1906, whatever that made him, and I was born in 24, so there was a big difference in age between us. Anyway, we went to the embassy party, and then I had now the British passport, so I could get out of Turkey. And we had to go it was a tiny sort of plane, I think Air Force maybe. But I remember we sat just on sacks or something, there weren't any seats proper in it, to Cyprus. And that was supposed to be our honeymoon in Cyprus. Well, I didn't ever like Cyprus very well. I think I didn't like islands, it was too small, you know. Anyway, we went there and stayed in the Dome Hotel in Kyrenia. And Donald, where did he make those friends? He had one very good friend was, she was the nurse in the hospital in Cyprus. I think he may have been Scottish, I can't remember now. And then there was an army doctor there. Donald had very good friends, a white Russian couple whom he had met before. He had been in Cyprus before then on a visit, and they were very, very nice to us. And in fact, he was a weaver, this Russian guy, and he gave us a lovely rug as a wedding present, which I still have, you know, hand-woven, beautiful rug. And they were very, very nice to us. So we were there for 3 weeks in Cyprus. And then they said, well, you better go to Cairo now, where you can get transport back to Britain. And we did that. So again, in this little plane, we went to Cairo. And I have a very good memory. I liked it a lot in Cairo, you know. It was very nice. We were treated very well, and I remember we had a black man. He was sort of lying outside your hotel door, always just waiting for your orders. And he was from the Sudan, a Sudanese, very nice. And you could look out of the hotel window, and there was a screen cinema So all you had to do was sit on your balcony and watch the cinema. It was really luxury as far as I was concerned. And then there was what was called the Gezira Club, which was mainly for foreigners, mainly British people. So we would go there every day. There was a swimming pool, and we had quite a lot of friends there, you know, British Council people who were waiting like us. And so we went swimming every day, and there were great big lovely meals there. It was very comfortable, very nice. And then they said, oh, there's the last convoy of the war is just about to come to Cairo, so you can go back to Britain on that. So we said, okay. And that was awful. You were in the officers, the women were in the officers' quarters, which was just bunks, you know. And the men had to sleep on deck, just find anywhere they could. So I didn't even see Donald very often. I mean, I was just in the bunk there. And fortunately, I had one very good friend who was sort of sleeping not far from me. But it was not good. It was pretty horrendous.
And it was a long journey. How long did it take?
Yeah, we were on that boat, I think, for about 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh,
quite long.
And were you excited to be going to Britain?
I was glad. Well, sure, I was worried because I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Mm.
And Donald hadn't told me quite the truth either. He had said, oh, we're going to be on a farm and everything will be fine, you know. And then it turned out that wasn't really true. His parents were in Glasgow, and he didn't like to tell me that. And later on, I understood why. But at that time, I couldn't understand why he would be telling me something that wasn't true. But then, so that kind of put the kibosh on it a bit. But anyway, we got into Liverpool, and, well, I thought Liverpool was lovely. You know, the red fences, the white houses, the green grass. I said, what a lovely place this is, you know, very nice. But what was waiting for us? And me, of course, in the first few weeks of pregnancy, and, you know, I don't think I felt that well. Anyway, we got on the train and we got to Glasgow, and there was Donald's father and mother at the station waiting for us. And I couldn't understand a word of what his father was saying because he was an Aberdonian. And of course he spoke with a very, very heavy accent. So, and then his mother was okay. I could hear what she was saying. But I thought to myself, well, what are these people thinking who I am? You know, they'd probably never seen a Jew in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that wasn't very good.
And do you think they were worried for their son bringing this?
Well, they were very glad to see him, I'm sure, you know. Come back from the war and, you know, and he brought this girl, which they didn't know anything about, except that she was originally German. Jewish didn't mean anything to them much, I didn't think. So it was very odd, really. But I must say, they were wonderful when I think back on it. You know how they accepted me. Anyway, we went to their place, and that, again, I mean, they lived in a very working-class area of Glasgow, which I wasn't used to. I mean, I was used to kind of not posh, but middle-class, and theirs was definitely not middle-class, but very working-class.
And is that why Donald had not told
you
that?
Yeah, no, I think that's right.
Right.
Anyway, in Glasgow, he seemed to know everybody. I said, how come you know everybody? You know, we'd go out in the street, oh, Donald, it's you, like, blah, blah, blah. And it turned out because he was a Glasgow Blue, you know what that means?
No.
That means that you've excelled in some sport. And Donald was a runner. And he was really well known in Glasgow because he was top-notch runner. Well, I didn't understand that really very well, but anyway. So he wanted to introduce me to all sorts of friends, and Some were more friendly than others, you know. And there were quite a few who understood exactly where I came from and who I was, and others didn't have a clue. And the other thing was, of course, there wasn't any food then. There was rationing. And I was used to the flesh pots, you know. We never had much rationing. One egg a fortnight, I think it was.
And unlike Liverpool, you weren't very impressed with Glasgow?
No, I was not impressed with Glasgow at all. But, you know, what could I do anyway? And I had a very nice sister-in-law she was very nice to me. And she had two children, one of whom I still am in touch with. She lives in Glasgow. And, well, actually her brother too, I still know.
And did you live with your parents-in-law?
Yes, we had to. There wasn't anywhere else to go, really. And they made us for them it was very welcoming. You know, they were fine, really. It just me, it struck as being very odd. So we stayed with them. And, of course, there was clothes rationing, and Donald insisted buying me maternity clothes, and I wasn't very happy about that. And we had to go out to, it was Fuller's tea room every day because I was so hungry. And in Fuller's, it wasn't rationed. You could have cakes and scones and things. So we went every day, we went to Fuller's to eat.
And did Donald have a job at this point?
No, because he'd left the British Council and he was looking for work. And he was very interested in the Food and Agricultural Organization, but couldn't get a job there. And he had a lot of high-ranking friends, you know, who would look for him, but nothing turned up, really. And in the meantime, I was getting nearer and nearer the child's birth. And he said, well, never worry, we'll just have to go to Arran, to the country, you know. And I'll be able to work there in the farm. I said, okay. But in the meantime, of course, I had to have this child. He took me to the most expensive gynecologist in Glasgow because that was an old friend of his. And the baby was born under a full anesthetic. I don't remember a thing about the birth because this was such a posh gynecologist. And then I said, well, wait a minute. And I had always friends in London because, you know, old friends from Germany and my mother's friends and family, because a lot of my family were in England. So I could always go to London and kind of escape. I said, wait a minute, my Turkish is perfect. I'll apply to the BBC for a job, you know, get a job as somebody there. And I was having this baby, and I wrote to the BBC, and they said, oh yes, come at once. We need somebody very badly, you know. And I said, well, I'll have to tell them the truth. How can I go with a baby that's just 2 weeks old? I really can't do it. So that was a bit of a washout, but at least I felt, well, I could be used somewhere. And I had to say, no, I can't do it, you know. And then we went to Arran. And these friends of Donald's, who owned a big farm in Arran, were very, very good to us. They took us in, and we lived with them for Kirstine to sort of get out of the very first baby stage. And oh, they were very good. And of course, there was more food, you know. There was an egg almost every day, and porridge. I had to learn to eat porridge. But there was plenty of food, really, cream and everything, you know.
And did they accept
that you were more accepting? Refugee? Well, I think they did understand it a bit better, you know, who I was and what I was. And in any case, they were very, very kind to me. Very kind. And they had a landgirl and children about the same age as me, so it was much more interesting for me. And eventually we lived in a cottage there with a little old lady who thought I was very strange that I didn't know anything about how to light the Rayburn cooker, and a lot of difficulties, but in spite of that. And the doctor, he was awful. I said, well, I'll have to get Kirstin vaccinated. You know, they didn't know about all of this, I don't think. I said, I want to vaccinate, and he gave her a great big thing, and I kind of argued with him. But I was got very friendly with the butcher's wife. She was a very nice lady, and she had a child about the same age as Kirstin, so, you know, I made friends.
Did you feel any desire to find out if there were other people similar to you in anywhere in Scotland?
Not at all. I just tried to fit in the best I could, really. Well, what else? And then the British Council said, well, you could come back to us if you're willing to go to, and what did they call it? Groningen, I think. We said, what's Groningen? Where's Groningen? And it turns out, of course, Groningen is in Holland, but that wasn't what they meant. They said Göttingen.
In Germany.
Yeah, in Germany. And so we said, okay. So that's when we went to Germany.
And were you
and
quite
that
happy
was
to
of
do that?
Course strange for me, yes. You know, because I thought, well, it's pretty close. The war's only just finished, and it's strange that they should want to send me there, having been a German originally. And they said, oh, it doesn't matter. And of course, in those days, you see, you were more part of the army than of your own.
So were you going as part of the military rather than the British
Council?
Well,
no, British Council. It was definitely the British Council. But we did all the... But we got all the facilities that the military had. I mean, like housing and the NAFI, you know. We could shop in and everything was just like military. Mm. But I thought, well... like Alison, then Alison, when was she born? Wait a minute, I'm leaving out something, I'm sure, yeah. No, because Alison was born in Edinburgh after... Wait a minute, there's a bit missing here. Where did we go first? Did we go to Bratislava first? Maybe it was...
Yes, I think you said you
yes,
went to
I think it was...
First.
God, I'm getting it muddled
yes,
up. I'm
right.
sure that's
tired.
Right. We went to Bratislava and we stayed there for 4 years. But in the end, Donald was shot at by a Hungarian, and that's why I don't like the Hungarians even now.
Mm. And why was he shot?
Well, God knows, but I think they suspected that he was a spy. Because at that time, we could go to Vienna quite easily. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just, you went to Vienna just like you're going... from here to Glasgow, it was very near.
Right.
And it was just before Christmas, so Donald decided he would just pay a visit to Vienna and get some Christmas shopping done. And when he came back, I was actually in the kitchen baking Christmas biscuits, you know, and we had a little dog. And suddenly I heard the dog running away to the door, and I thought, what's going on? I was alone with the children. They were asleep. And when I went to the door, there was a guy having the gun on his hand and had shot Donald. And Donald was just dragging himself back into the house. And he said, you've got to do a tourniquet. And I didn't have a notion what a tourniquet is. But I soon found out. And then I immediately phoned up a friend of ours, a surgeon, Slovak, and told him that Donald had been shot at. Oh, he said, I'll send an ambulance right away. took him to the hospital and dealt with him as best he could. But he said, there's a bullet in his groin, really, and I can't remove that. It's too dangerous, you know. Very, very nice man. Good old friend. And then the consul, he lived very near us, so I phoned him and he came up straight away and stayed with me. And, well, Donald was in hospital there for a fortnight.
And the man who, this Hungarian...
And the man, this Hungarian...
Did he run away?
Well, of course he ran off, but I recognized him. I knew that he was coming to our house, to the woman who lived below us, like a soup kitchen, you know, eating every day. So they said, oh, we'll have to have a parade and bring all the guys and let you see which one. And I pointed them out straight away, I knew. So then there were all sorts of funny things like, well, I said, you know, I can't stay by myself in this house if it's so dangerous. And they said, no, we'll send some guards for you. When I went out in the night to the loo, I discovered that it was soldiers, you know, and there were Russian books. What are you reading? I said, and when they showed me it was Russian, I said, God, I said to the police, I don't want Russian soldiers outside my door, you know, you have to take them away. And they said, no, we'll send police. So then they sent police. And then in the end, and that's all near Christmas, and we had a very good colleague, friends, who lived in a tiny flat with two children, and they said, oh, you just have to come to us, you know, for Christmas. We can't leave you here. So I went with the kids, with Kirsten and Keith, and they had two small children and in this tiny flat. And we spent Christmas there. And then, I'm probably leaving things out. Then the ambassador from Prague decided he would come down and see what was going on, you know. So he came and had to give them a big dinner, and British Council people. And they all said, well, you can't stay here, you'll have to go home. And so we had to up sticks, and I had to pack up everything. And we went back to Britain. And
Donald still had the
Donald
bulletin.
Yes, he still had the bullet. And when we got to... Then they said, oh, don't talk to anybody. You know, when you get to London, there'll be... The press will be there, and don't talk to them. Just forget about it. Just go on. So then we went on, and of course when we got to Glasgow, the Plumen Press had been to Donald's mother and told her, and of course she was terrified what had happened. Poor thing. But where was his father? Had he died in the meantime? I don't think his father was there. Anyway, so that was pretty bad, really bad. But anyway, the British Council said, okay, you can't go abroad now, you've got to stay put. And luckily, when he went to the hospital, I mean, Donald had just friends everywhere. The main surgeon in the hospital in Glasgow was an old chum of his. So he said, oh, I'll remove that bullet. It was in his groin. And he took it out, and then Donald recovered. And so what did we do after that? Well, we went back to Arran, where we had the friends.
A safer place.
Safer place. And, and Alison was a baby. And then in the farm, we said, oh, we'll not stay in the house. So we camped with Alison. And, when Alison was born, that was terrible too. Well, I was pregnant then with Alison. And went to the hospital, and that was terrible. Keith was an awful cheeky boy when he was little, you know, and there are all sorts of stories about that, you know. He climbed out on the roof, and I had to beg him to come back in again, because, I mean, he would have fallen over the side, And then we were invited to a cousin of Donald's who lived in Edinburgh. And we went to this very nice tea party with all his cousins and aunties and everybody. And Keith, he was two then, he said to the people, well, of course, he said, I came out of my mummy's tummy. He was born in Bratislava, you see. But I think this one will come out of my daddy's. He said, you know, I had done enough.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, he was funny. And so I went to hospital to have Alison in Edinburgh. We were by this time. And we lived already in the flat that we lived until we came to this one. So we haven't lived in many different houses, which was right on top of a tenement building here in Edinburgh. Very nice flat. And it was very difficult to get any help. But I had a Czech girl at one point, and then I had a Danish au pair girl, and she was completely, really cuckoo. So I phoned her father one day. I said, I can't cope with this anymore. You'll have to get Annie back. She's three. Well, that's why we sent her to you. Well, I said, I don't want her. Anyway, Alison was born, and she was, the birth was not particularly difficult or anything, but immediately, I had a very nice young doctor girl, and she, after Alison was born, she came to me and she said, you know, I've got sad news. Alison was born with a blood disease, and we had to change her blood completely. So you can't nurse her, you can't even go and see her. And then Donald came and they would let him see her. And then the big white chief came from the hospital and he stood at my bedside, and I'll never forget this. And he said to me, does the woman know? And luckily this young doctor was there. Yes, she said, of course I told her all about it. Well, so that was okay. So amazingly, within a week, Alison was okay. You know, they really took good care of her there and completely changed her blood. And we went back home. And so then she grew up into a very jolly, nice baby. And Donald was very good. We had this great big pram, and we lived on the top floor of a building here to shake this pram down every day. But, you know, what? That was 2 years we were there in this building. And actually an old friend of Kirstine's, she's just coming in a few days to see us. She's always been a friend, you know, made lots of connections.
And he was still working.
And he was still with the British Council. And he had a very good job. He was director of what was called International House. And it was a place where students could come from all over the world and learn English or speak English. And it was like a lovely cafe. And he made lots of friends in Edinburgh, got to know a lot of painters and poets and all kinds of people to do with the festival. He had a very, very, I always envied him a bit. Here I was stuck with the kids and he was sitting in Princes Street, in this nice place. So he was there for 2 years. And then they said, well, it's time you moved on. And that's when we moved to Göttingen.
Right.
So in Göttingen, I said, well, Alison, she was two by this time, she'd better just go to a nursery school. And the only option really was a German one. So she grew up speaking German, really.
And the other two?
And the other two went to a British Army school. There was a British Army school. And Keith, awkward as ever, he said, I don't like that teacher. I'm not going to school. And he didn't. For about 3 months, I think. He just lay on the floor. No, I'm not going to that one. don't like the teacher. And he just didn't go until luckily the teacher was moved and then he was all right.
And how long were you in Göttingen?
We were there for 4 years. And of course we got friendly with the army people and there was a Nafi to do the shopping and Alison. We had a little dackel, and one day Alison just walked out and then a workman came to our door. He said, you know, we've just seen this little girl with a dackel walking across the road into the park with Alison. She was very independent. And then we had pretty awful, the houses were all owned by German old Nazis, and they took them away from them and put people like us and army people in them, and the people who owned our house were pretty awful. So they, in the end, we said we really want to move from there. And across the road from us lived Otto Hahn, you know, the man, the German physicist who became, he was really instrumental in working out the bomb for the Germans. A physicist, very famous physicist. Mm. And Kees was very friendly with his wife. He used to go over there and she always would talk to him and give him cups of tea and things. So they said, oh, you could move to our house. And that was just around the corner, another very nice house. So we did that. We lived in their house for a long time.
In a separate flat?
No, we had the whole house. They just had a flat because of only the two of them, you know. Right. They said, well, that's fine. And we lived among other quite famous physicists and people, you know, got to know them. And Donald worked in the university, didn't like his boss very much. He wasn't very nice, but he had a very nice assistant, nice lady. Some nice people in him, some not so nice people, and I got to know some people, and there was a very, very good German theater, at that time it was the best theater in Germany, in Göttingen. So,
and was it more difficult for you because you had been a Jewish refugee, do you think?
To say, really, because we were so much among the British company now, you know. This old lady, she was a German. There were German friends, but they understood, you know, where I came from and who I was. So it was both good and bad. Some of it not so good, some of it was fine. But, and then of course I did have German friends, from before. So I went to see them, Munich, old relations. And oh, there's so much, you know. I can't tell you at all.
No, of course not.
An awful lot.
But I believe you then ended up in Iceland, is that right?
But not much, quite a lot later than that. I mean, from Germany, we moved to Persia, to Tehran. And
again with the British Council?
Yes, yes. Mm. And that was not always good. But Donald didn't like it because he said it's like a factory. So many people wanting to learn English. He had these thousands on the street waiting to sign up for the classes, you know, and he was really getting terribly fed up with it, didn't like it. We had a very nice villa, which we rented from actually Jewish people. It was Persian Jewish people who had emigrated to Switzerland, and we rented their house. So we had a very nice house and a swimming pool and a dog and a bit of a glaked lady servant who just sat at the door waiting for orders, you know. And she was what they call Turki. She was Turkish, really. And that's why we had her, because I could speak to her in Turkish. But then one time, and then we had Jewish, very good Jewish friends who worked for the Jewish Alliance. And one summer we left them with the maid, and he was a doctor. He said, "You better get rid of her, she's got TB.
Yeah.
I said, "Oh God, I didn't know that." And so they fed her penicillin and, you know, all kinds of things like that. And then in between, I said, "I must go and see my folks in America." Mm-hmm. So I managed to go with Alison. No, I'd already gone with Kirsten and Keith before, but this time, was it from Persia? No, it wasn't from Persia, it was from Italy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we stayed in Persia for 2 years and then had to leave, really. It just was unbearable. There was so much antagonism, you know.
Towards the British?
Towards the British. And we were moved. But the children in Persia went to a German school because it was the only one that really looked after the children properly. Mm. All the others, you couldn't be sure that they wouldn't be abducted by some people or something. So they went to the German school, and one time Adenauer came, you know, and the photographs of Adenauer with Alison dancing for him. But they were good, you see, they looked after the kids properly. So, of course, when we went to Italy, I said, "Oh, well, that's okay. There's a German school here in Milan. You know, the kids can just go there." And that's what they did. They went to the German school. But by this time, I had already been to America with Kirsten and Keith. Well, I won't tell you all that story. But this time, I said, "I better go with Alison." So we took the liner, ocean liner, and went to America, Alison and I. And I said, "Oh, well, this is a good chance for Alison to go to an English-speaking school." Mm-hmm. So when I took her there, the teacher didn't like her. She said, "Oh, she's no good. She's far behind, you know, in age, and she was awful."
Because you were going to stay a bit with your parents, was
well,
that the intention?
Well, 2 months or something,
right.
You know, just paying a visit.
Yes.
But
right.
And so poor Alison, she really had a bad time there in America. It wasn't any good. But I had lots of friends there, you know, both relatives and friends, and we had quite a good time. And then on the way back again in the Italian liner, I met two very nice ladies, English, and they were very good with Alison and really kind, you know. And when I got back to Italy, of course, there was Donald, and he had looked after the kids with the help of our cook, Italian cook. And she was a very good lady. She came from the country. She was a real country lady. And the kids had a wonderful time. Donald looked after them really well, took them skiing and all kinds of things. And they were asked to join a television program which came up every week, I think, where they had to be an English-speaking family. So that was Donald and the wife of the British Council boss in Milan, and Keith, they made up the family. And and they were on the television and they got paid very well for this program. Just fun, really. So that was fine. And we had a wonderful flat right in the center of Milan. And then Keith went on the bus to school. And the bus was on a circular road in Milan, you know. And so sometimes the conductor, he would look after Keith. And sometimes he wouldn't let him off at the school. He said, "You haven't done enough Italian yet. You have to stay on the bus." Keith didn't mind, just stayed on the bus. But But they went to the German school in Milan, which was a very good school. And but we were only there for 2 years. 2 years, I think. Yeah, not long anyway. And made friends outside Milan. And even now Kerstin says to me, "Oh, you abandoned me there in a children's home that I didn't want to go to," and you know. And Alison went to a children's home. She was a bit better about it.
Why were they at a children's home?
Well, you know, we had so much to do in Milan. There was so much going on that I thought, well, they're better out of the way in the countryside, and it's nice in the mountains. And
oh, you mean it was a kind of boarding school?
No, they were just children's homes, really. Right. And the school that Kerstin and Keith had to go was part of their proper school, and they just had camps, you know.
I see.
So I thought, oh, that'll be all right. No, no. I had to fetch Keith back. He wasn't happy, and Kirstie now says she wasn't happy there either, oh, but dear. She didn't say anything.
Was that in the summer holidays?
Not really, no. It was sort of school camps.
Right. I see.
And so, well, after that, then we came back. That's when we went to Iceland, and of course, going to Iceland meant I couldn't take the kids because, well, I didn't want to have to put them in Icelandic school, but we did take Alison with us for a year and try to teach her ourselves, you know, that there's a special...
Home teaching.
Home, uh-huh, like I forget that. What it's called. But it didn't work really terribly well. And the kids by this time now went to Dola because I said, well, if they have to go to a boarding school, I'd like them to be together. And Dola, of course, is a co-educational school. And Donald happened to know the headmaster from times past. Right. The teachers all know each other. And that turned out to be quite a bad choice in a way because... what happened? He got chucked out, this man. And did the school go on fire or something? There were problems. But anyway, they were at the school. And they were allowed to come every holiday. The British Council paid for the kids to come to Iceland to visit us. And they did that. And they had a very nice time in Iceland. And you know, all got friendly, and especially with the British and American embassy, and the girl then, who was the same age as them in the American embassy, they are still friendly with here now, because she's now married to a Scotsman, and she won't go back to America, she lives here, so they still see her, and they still know the British ambassador's kids, and you know, that's all been fine, really, in a way, difficult in some other ways. But there are connections.
And during all this time, were you just a mum at home, or did you?
And I would be, well, I was by this time back in Edinburgh, and so I thought, well, what am I going to do? I'm not going to sit here fiddling. So I looked up the paper. I looked at the Times and I thought, no, what's important? You know, what jobs are there for somebody my age?
How old were you by then?
Well, I was 40-something.
Right.
And it was either chiropody or social work.
Right.
Oh, I said chiropody, poking in people's feet. I don't fancy that. I'll see what social work will be about. So I applied here to Murray House and they looked at me and they said, well, you're okay, but you haven't got any experience. I said, what are you looking for? What more experience could I have? You know, I thought I had plenty. Maybe not exactly social work, but you know.
Of life.
Life, that's right. They said, well, that's not right. We need social work experience. So they put me together with a very nice man who took me on as a sort of
apprentice,
supervised me, uh-huh. really. And he took me, and he put me together with a very nice Jewish lady who was just a year ahead of me, and she took me on as a kind of, well, anyway, helper.
Mm-hmm.
And she worked in clinics, and I worked with her for a year, and then I went back again and said, no, I've done that, you know, am I all right to start on the course? And I did. That's then when I started social work course here at Murray House and did 2 years and qualified and started working as a social worker.
And what were you doing as a social worker?
First worked for out in the country for a country practice. And after 2 years, I started working in Edinburgh. But again, mostly out in the country.
Mm. And Donald, was he retired by this time?
No, he was in Iceland.
Oh, you left him behind in
yes,
Iceland?
Yes, oh yes.
I didn't realise that.
No, he came back too.
Mm-hmm.
But not the same time as me. I think he stayed longer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not telling you. No, he came back and he said, well, I'll teach, that's right. Mm. And so the job he got was in Dunfermline, so he had to cross over on the bridge every day. And after a year, so that's, I can't be bothered with that anymore. And he got a job at the blind school.
Mm.
And of course, he didn't have a clue about teaching blind people, but they said, well, you'll have to do a course in Wiltshire or somewhere. There's a college for teaching of the blind. And Donald did that. He did a course. He went and qualified. And they liked him a lot. And the kids loved him in the blind school. He was there for years and years and years until really late on when he shouldn't have been teaching anymore. But they said, oh, it doesn't matter. Just come and take the kids, you know. And he did that until he was in his 80s.
I see.
Yeah. He was in the blind school for many, many years.
Yeah.
They still knew him there.
Of course.
He was swimming there, and they were very nice to him. Mm-hmm. That's right, I nearly forgot. Yeah.
Mm.
He worked.
If you look back now on your time here in Scotland, what would you say were the high points of your life here?
That's very difficult to say.
The family, I assume.
Yes, I don't think I can really say.
Mm.
I mean, I suppose it was my time as a social worker.
Mm.
I enjoyed some of it, not all of it.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it was difficult always with the children, you know. They were at different stages, doing different things, and I can't say that. That was always my best time, seeing. And then, of course, Kirstine and Hugh, they met each other here at the university. They were students together, and they got married here. So that was nice. Alison, on the other hand, had a very hard time. I mean, she went to work near Liverpool. She's always had a hard time, Alison. And then she went to live in Ireland. And, gosh, that was very worrying because she was working in, what's that place called? In the West, where there was lots of trouble. And she was working for a firm in, I always think it's some guy who made this farmer's jackets. Farmer's tweeds.
Burberry.
Pardon?
Burberry?
No. What's his name worked for Burberry, I think? Her husband.
Mm.
No, she worked in the south. She had to go over the border every day. She had to drive through the police, you know,
right.
with a shaky She had a terrible car. She had to hold the car, the door shut, go over there. But the police got to know her, of course. And then she worked for this guy who was making farmers' jackets, beautiful tweeds. And she was designing the tweeds. So she had a very good job, but it was dodgy, you know, difficult. Mm-hmm. And then she went back, of course, she had that kid and went, took him back. And well, they had a hard time in Ireland.
How important would you say Judaism has been in your life? Was it of any significance after you left Germany?
How significant was what?
Was being Jewish, starting in a Jewish world and leaving it as you did?
It's never ever bothered me, being Jewish. I mean, sure, I mean, I'm very aware that I would never deny it. But it hasn't ever been any trouble to me.
And do you think of yourself now as Scottish or German, or you've been to so
international.
Many places, international.
Yes, I wouldn't particularly ascribe any nationality to myself, I don't think. If anything, probably now a bit German, but not when I hear the terrible stories that people have to tell, then I think, oh God, that wasn't me. And I'm very lucky to have got away from it, but, you know. And I still do have one friend, definitely, and the other one, I don't know whether still alive, friends who were babies with me in the same house in Germany, and we still correspond. And I know that one of the husbands was a Nazi. The other one, I don't think so, but they've always kept in touch, all through the years, which I think is probably quite unusual.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you, Dorothea. That was fascinating.
I don't know, maybe too long.